Hi, this is Lori, your host of Happiness Hangout, a space to come and elevate your happiness levels. You, me, and our guests will discuss and help you apply happiness to all aspects of your life, even if you're already happy. Get your daily boost of information to help you feel your best. Hi, everyone. This is Lori, and welcome again to the Happiness Hangout. So glad you could join us today. We're very excited today to be talking about a radical process that can change your life. And that is the law of emergence. So I'm glad you're here today at the Happiness Hangout, which is the place and space to help you feel your best. And I would like to introduce our guest today. We have Derek Rydahl. And part of a new generation of spiritual visionaries and thought leaders, Derek Rydahl is the author of the number one Amazon Barnes & Noble bestseller, Emergence: 7 Steps for Radical Life Change, and is the world's expert on the revolutionary law of emergence. He has trained top executives at Fortune 500 companies, from American Express to Disney, in empowered leadership and communications. He's coached celebrities and media professionals, including Oscar and Emmy Award winners, on creating conscious entertainment. He regularly writes for the Huffington Post and has touched hundreds of thousands around the planet with his message on finding your path, living your purpose, and making a powerful impact. In his weekly Emergence podcast on iTunes, he reveals cutting-edge spiritual principles and success strategies to achieve financial freedom and abundance, master productivity and creativity, and gain true wealth and happiness. Derek Rydahl, welcome to the Happiness Hangout. We're glad to have you.
Oh, thank you. It's really my honor and pleasure to be here.
Well, I'm particularly excited about this because I have been a follower of the law of attraction for many years. And quite frankly, just kind of using that line of thinking in the way I look at life has produced amazing things in my life. So if you don't mind, I want to back up a little bit and ask you to kind of tell us in an overview, and I hope some of our listeners and have been able to read the blog, because I always blog about what we do before our show. But if you haven't had a chance, can you tell our folks just like a little preview or a little overview of what the law of emergence is, and how did the law of emergence come into your life?
Well, you know, like a lot of people, I had been, you know, I struggled with self-improvement for many, many years, trying to heal my life, heal from my past, fix, change, attract, achieve. And after over a decade of self-improvement therapy and modalities, the only thing I'd really improved was my ability to describe why my life was so messed up. You know, I became very articulate, very eloquent, and very much improved at explaining and describing why things weren't working, you know. But rather than things getting better, I was more frustrated, had a deeper sense of inadequacy, and ultimately became addicted to drugs and alcohol, and then nearly died of an overdose. And I remember lying in the emergency room with an IV snaking out of my arm and wondering, how did all of my self-improvement get me here? And that wasn't quite enough to crack me open. You know, that wasn't quite enough for me to realize something was wrong with this picture. I just basically dug in and redoubled my efforts and tried to attract and achieve and manifest and fix and improve twice as hard. And I was ultimately on a film doing a movie in Jamaica where everything started to go bad, and I ended up going off alone and diving in a coral reef and just praying to get lost from everything above. And, you know, that was maybe the one time where my prayer really did get answered. And I got extremely lost underwater in this labyrinthian coral reef and trapped in a pocket of spiked coral and fire coral and couldn't get out. And nobody knew I was there. And without going into the whole story, I basically got to a moment where I knew I was going to drown. And all of my wit and charm and affirmations and none of that was going to get me out of there. And, you know, I tried negotiating with the universe. You know, I promised God, if you get me out of this, I'll go to church on Sunday. And that still wasn't working. And eventually, I had nothing left to do but surrender. And in this moment of complete and total surrender, something cracked open in me. And it was just a brief flash, but I saw that this self that I've been trying to fix and achieve and improve and attract stuff to, and that it was really a fictional character. It was an amalgam of societal conditioning and peer pressure and parental fantasies, and I would never, ever be able to improve him. But right behind it, there was this other self, this other dimension of me that was never damaged by life, and so it didn't need to be fixed. And it was already perfect, so it couldn't be improved. And it was just this flash, this awareness. And in that same instant, this wave came along, or the water literally rose. I still don't know for sure how. But I was in the next instant, I leaped out of this pocket of, literally, I still don't know how I quite did it. And I was standing outside looking into this, on this coral reef, looking where I've been stuck this whole time. And the exit was just inches from me the whole time.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, and I saw this reef and all these brightly colored objects that I've been following, and I realized it was like a metaphor for my life. And I basically, the man that swam out of that reef was not the same man that swam in. Something really cracked in me. My ego was ripped from its moorings. You know, Humpty Dumpty fell off the wall. And I ended up pulling out of society and was going to become a monk. And ultimately, that didn't work out too well. It's another funny story of my monk story, my journey at a monastery. But I ended up basically cloistering myself in my apartment and going on this inner journey for the next couple of years to understand what happened to me in that coral reef. What did I see? What was that thing I touched? And as I began to unpack it, I could see that just like there is the oak tree already is in the acorn, and that the acorn doesn't have to attract an oak or achieve an oak or become worthy of an oak, that it's already in the acorn. It's already the nature of the acorn. And when the conditions in the soil match the pattern within that seed, that potential naturally emerges. And this is how all of nature unfolds. And I could see that same pattern, that same principle was true for us. And that's when I coined the idea of the law of emergence. And I could see that most of my efforts to attract and achieve were coming from a belief and a premise that I didn't already have it, that I was broken, that I was lacking, that something was missing or something was wrong. And so by the law of mind, if I'm trying to attract and achieve and do all these things from a premise that something's broken, lacking, missing, or wrong, I'm only going to magnify that underlying belief. In fact, even if I manage to manifest a bigger paycheck, I will find myself broke at a higher income bracket. And this is indeed what I saw many people struggle through. They'd manifest a bigger house, but they would be even less at home. They would manifest more money, but they would just be broke at a higher income bracket and with more problems and more pressures. They'd manifest a new job and end up with the same jerky boss, now just wearing a different uniform. Or they'd manifest that new relationship, and they'd end up in the same arguments. And because fundamentally all they were doing was manipulating conditions, but they had not fundamentally changed. And that's why Gandhi said, you must be the change or become the change you want to see in the world. So I realized that, and you know, ironically, you know, I've often, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, but not entirely, said, you know, is it a coincidence that just before the greatest collapse in our economy since the Depression, the greatest financial collapse, housing collapse, job collapse, we had the biggest, most unprecedented wave of people practicing law of attraction type technologies to manifest more money, better jobs, and bigger houses. And when you understand the underlying flaw in when you don't include the law of attraction in a larger paradigm, which we'll talk about, it's not hard to understand at all that if you've got millions of people trying to manifest these things from an underlying belief that it's not already the truth, that they don't already have it, then what they're really magnifying is a consciousness of lack and limitation and not enough. And again, I've seen this play out many, many, many times amongst people in the, you know, new thought and success field, where, you know, you hear about the stories of people being able to use law of attraction in a way that's been beneficial, but when you investigate it, they have inadvertently fallen under really the law of emergence. And or they've attracted and manipulated their conditions, but they're fundamentally still struggling just at another level. So, or they're just stressed out trying to hold it all together, like this guy I knew that manifested a Mercedes, and then a few weeks later was basically, it was in the shop for the third time, and he couldn't afford to keep it up, and now he was trying to pray himself out of the mess he had attracted himself into. So this was my experience, and when I began to put these pieces together, I began to understand why not only was my life not working, but it was getting worse and worse, because I was basically praying a prayer or an affirmation of, I don't have it yet, I don't have it yet, it's not happening yet, I'm not enough yet, every time I was trying to attract something or achieve something.
And so you have to look at yourself as already being, if you could use the word, whole and fine and good. So if you say something like, and I used to be like this and I realized my language was off, if you say, I want more money, I want more money, I want more money, then you look like you lack money. So you really have to say at that moment, you know, you have to kind of tell me if I'm on the right track. This is what I've done. You have to appreciate the money you have, hold the money, be grateful for it. When money comes in, say, see, more money comes in all the time. I've even heard of people writing themselves like fake checks, you know, and things like that. It's, you know, it's already here. You just have to let it in instead of saying like, I don't have it, I don't have it, I don't have it. I want it, I want it, I want it. You have to really believe it's already there. You just have to open up and let it in somehow, don't you?
Yeah, and I'll even go a step further. It is actually already here. And I'll use an analogy that I think everybody can understand. Right now, where we are, where you are, whoever's listening, right where you are, you are being bombarded. You are swimming in a sea of broadcasts. And within that vibrational soup of broadcast, your favorite music is playing, and information as well, beyond, besides this show, that would truly inspire you. And if you were to suddenly hear that music, you'd feel like you want to dance, you'd feel great, you'd feel inspired, but it's already broadcasting right where you are, but it is not manifest. It's happening, but it is not manifest in terms of the tangible senses. But it's there. And so we can understand that. When you tune the dial of your radio to the station where it's playing, in other words, your frequency now matches the frequency where that song is playing, then that music becomes manifest. You have a manifest station. And now that music wasn't in the distance. It wasn't in the future. It didn't suddenly get made because you tuned into it. It was always broadcasting there, but you had to come into a vibrational alignment with what already was. So the same thing is true with everything else. You know, when the conditions in the environment match the vibrational pattern in the acorn, oak tree manifests. The oak tree was already there vibrationally. It's already there in the quantum field. Not merely in potential, it's potential in terms of this dimension, but it's in full vibrational expression, just like the song is. But it doesn't become manifest until the conditions become a vibrational match.
Sure. And talk to us about how we can, okay, so we already know it's there. Like if you say, just by asking, I know, kind of generates it, like, I'd really love to have this, or I'd really love to do this, whatever it might be. So you ask for it, so you have put it out there. How do you get, and I know this is probably an entire book's worth, but give us some kind of information, if you could, Derek, about how you then get the vibrational frequency to match of what you want, and it's already there. How do you get lined up?
Yes, there's a lot of things, and indeed, my whole book, Emergence, is a master's course on how to do that, and not a master's course, like it's not academic or complicated, but it is, to put in the simplest terms, it's all about tuning your dial to match the frequency where your destiny is already broadcasting, where that beat of abundance is already playing, that symphony of success is already singing. So it's already happening right where you are. And even, you know, what all the great master teachers said this. Jesus said, heaven is at hand now, and he also said it was within you. Buddha called it nirvana. Lao Tzu called it the Tao. But they all said it was within you. And now the quantum physicists say that you are in the quantum field, and the quantum field is in you. So it's all the same thing, just different language. But the essential, Plato called it the perfect forms. It's the essential first step that we have to come into agreement with, even if we don't yet see the evidence, is the principle is that everything you could ever want or desire or need to live the greatest life is already within you, it's already where you are, and it's already who you are in truth. It's just that it's largely invisible, vibrational, and if you're not experiencing it, it's just because you're not fully in alignment with it yet. You're not fully tuned into it or congruent with it. So the first thing is you got to know it's all there. And there are clues to what's trying to emerge in your life. They look like your deepest heart's desires. Those burning desires are not telling you what's out there that you don't have and you need to go get. It's telling you what's in here trying to get out. So that burning desire, which comes from the root of the sire, of the father, of the creative principle, it's telling you what's already in you. You're pregnant with it. And those things in the world that really pull you, that like, oh my God, that's amazing, that person's amazing, oh my God, I wish I was like them, I wish I knew, all of those are vibrational clues of actually what's in you. You couldn't vibrate with them if they weren't in you. Just like if you strike a violin on stage, that note rings out and it vibrates in all the violins in the orchestra pit. If you take the string that note's playing on off of those violins, you could strike that violin all day long and they're not going to vibrate because they don't have that note anymore. So these are all clues, first of all, how you begin to tune into what is already in me trying to become manifest.
Pay attention to your intuition and your gut, right?
Yeah, your intuition, your desire, the things and the people that really pull you and attract you and just totally inspire you. And I call it the soul profile test, where you write down five people that, living or dead, that you just think are just amazing in some way. And you write down all the things you think are amazing about them, their story, their talents, their gifts, their abilities, their character. And what you're really describing is your emerging self. And it's being projected, but you would not have that experience if it wasn't in you. So then you begin to formulate this vision for your life, this blueprint of what's this greater life that's trying to emerge. In other words, you become aware of what is that seed of greatness planted in the soil of my soul. Now you start to articulate it, to refine it and define it and write it down and become familiar with it. Then the next step is you have to design a way of life inside and out that is now congruent with that. Just like a gardener has to cultivate the soil and the environment to be congruent to that seed. And so that means having a certain amount of light and nourishment and all of that. So for us, you know, a lot of times our lives have been designed by default or from defense, meaning they're designed from a place of lack, limitations, fear of rejection, fear of loss. And so the things that we think and feel and say and to do and the people and the interactions and our environments tend to be populated with things that represent us trying to make sure we don't get hurt or don't lose or struggling or defending or trying to not feel the pain that we feel. And what we have to begin to do is design a life that begins to reflect this seed of greatness that's in us. So we start to develop relationships, people, places, objects, and activities that now resonate with the person we would be if we were living our destiny. So, for example, let's say we have a vision of, you know, greater wealth and abundance in our life, and we just know that that's something we're meant to have and express. And then you use some of the tools we're familiar with. You use visualization, and you visualize your ideal life if you were living a life of abundance. and you become aware of how does it feel, what are the qualities of feeling, and what are the qualities of being? Who are you being? So let's say you feel joyful and you feel playful, and you notice you're being generous and you're being spontaneous or creative. So you write those qualities down. Now we want to transpose those into actual activities, practice, and a way of life. So you might take the first quality, let's say quality of joy, and you ask yourself, and first of all, you'll look at your own life and you'll say, okay, I'd be joyful, playful, spontaneous, creative, generous. And you look at, well, where, and you get honest with yourself, where am I right now in comparison to that? And if you're really honest, you'll see the vibrational gap. You'll see the character gap. You'll see that you're not really walking around feeling very joyful, or you're not really actively being playful or spontaneous or generous. You're being protective. You're being serious. You're struggling, you know, all of that. So there's you can see what's called the vibrational gap. And in business, we have what's called current revenue and the revenue you want to make, and that's called the revenue gap. And then you make what's called a revenue plan. In other words, a plan and a practice to bridge that gap. So you do the same thing vibrationally. You go, okay, there's my vibrational gap. This is where I live. This is where I would be living emotionally, mentally, vibrationally if I was living that vision of abundance. Now you take, let's say, the quality of joy, and you take the category of people, places, objects, and activities. And you start to write down what are the people, places, objects, activities that when you've done them in the past, or when you sometimes do them, or if you did do them or have them, you would feel and feel activated a quality of joy or happiness. And so you might remember, oh yeah, when I have spent time with Sally or Bob, I really do feel happy, but I just don't feel like I have the time to do it very much anymore. Or yeah, when I go out in nature, I really do feel happy and joyful, but you know, I got to drive, or I just don't have the time, or when I do, you know, spend time doing this particular activity, like dancing or singing or doing yoga, I feel really happy, but I haven't been doing it for a long time, or I wanted to start that class, but I haven't yet. So you'll start to notice, oh yeah, I want to spend more time with those people, or I want to be doing more of that activity, or I want to be spending more time in that environment, or these certain objects, paintings, music, objects of the sense, that when they're in your environment, they tend to stimulate this quality. So you write all that down, and then you begin to design those elements back into your life again. And you start to notice this is the life you've been wanting to live, but have a lot of reasons, aka excuses, why you can't. And you don't have to try to do it all at once, but you just start designing those back into your life again. And conversely, you notice the people, places, objects, and activities that take you away from joy. And I'm just using joy as an example. Could be whatever your quality is. And you start to engineer those out of your life as best you can. And as you do that, sometimes slowly and sometimes dramatically, you start to feel better, you start to feel more effortlessly and automatically happy, joyful, or whatever the quality is, and you are now coming into a vibrational alignment that isn't just some quick fix, but it becomes effortless, it becomes automatic, and you literally integrate that new vibrational frequency. And that vibrational frequency, as it comes into alignment with the vibration of your own emerging potential, it manifests as new opportunities, money, abundance, whatever. The difference is you're already there before the manifestation comes. Because we think we want the money, but what we really want is how the money makes us feel.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest secret. You know, that's the real secret. The real secret is that we're not really striving for money and fame and name and people and places and things. We're really striving in the truest sense for how it makes us feel and who we allow ourselves to be in terms of our character, our expression, when those conditions arise. And the best news is we don't have to wait for the condition to feel that way and to be that person. And when we start to feel that way and be that person, we're already home. We're already free, even before the money shows up or the job shows up or the perfect mate shows up. And then when those things do show up, they're just what are called the added things. And they add beautiful icing on the cake, and we get to share it and express it, but they no longer are, we're no longer serving them. They are serving us. And because we are not entering into that relationship to get something, we are bringing it. And so we're free. And then we're not becoming victimized by conditions or have to be manipulative or manipulated, because we already are there in the joy, in the peace, in the confidence before the circumstance manifests. That's true freedom.
Well, it is. And you know what's interesting? Most people, you know, think about having, you know, they need something. It's often about money or it surrounds that somehow. But, you know, and I have been, you know, studying this area for years. And I look back, the time I never worried about money, obviously, like most of us, is when I was a kid. So I find that, you know, the more things I do that I love, my passion is my happiness hangout, my business, and this radio show is part of it. That is my absolute passion. It is not work. I wake up so excited to do what I need to do, you know, in my business. And I love teaching and these types of things. I find the more we surround ourselves with the people, places, and things that we love, it can generate a lot of different things coming in. Because, and I have to be real open about this, I was just dealing with a financial situation right before we got on the call. And you made me think, I messed up. I got so immersed in it and so almost upset about it. And and as we were on the call, I thought, why? This all always works out fine. And I understand that money, you know, when you don't have any money, a lot of people, they're so desperate to get it that they never get themselves in a position to set themselves right with letting it in. And it takes, you know, you just have to take a deep breath and relax. And I often, Derek, have to come back to and refocus myself and say, wait a minute, you're doing it all wrong. You've gone back to your old way again. Because no matter how long I've practiced this, for probably 12 years, I still sometimes accidentally go back, but I stop myself and go, wait a minute, calm down. You know you're gonna get, you know you've got this. It's like wanting money. Well, listen. What if you could get where you wanted to be, like you say, that happiness in a lot of different ways? What if you didn't have money, but also what if you didn't have expenses? Or what if people gave you things? Or what if that came into your life? A lot of people focus, I think, so much on the money that they see past the gifts that are coming into them in other ways to help them through their situation. I just wanted to make some of those comments because I've found I've struggled or had good things with money throughout the years.
Well, what you're talking about, you're talking about what is the real nature of wealth and abundance. And it's not money. Money is only one symbol of the consciousness of wealth and abundance and or supply. And in fact, I mean, that's, I go into great depths in my program, Awakened Wealth, which is a deep dive into the fourth stage of the emergence work, which is give what appears missing, or whatever's missing is what you're not giving. And it's the underlying fundamental principle, which is called the Great Reversal, which is that everything is already within us, and whatever is missing in our environment is what we are not in some way generating, that we are a divine power plant, and we can generate all the energy we need, all of the supply that we need. But when it comes to then specifically focusing that in the area of wealth, one of the first, what I call hypnotic wealth spells, is the belief that money, dollars, is wealth. And it's not. It is a symbol of wealth. Only one of many, as you just mentioned, several others. And that, you know, that when you look at a fruit tree, the fruit of the tree is not the wealth of the tree. That's why when all the fruit is gone, the farmer doesn't cut all the trees down and say they're broke. The farmer knows they are just as wealthy as when they have the fruit on them. They're not more or less wealthy when the fruit's on or off. The fruit is just the fruit of the wealth of the tree. It's the symbol of the wealth, but the wealth is that invisible process that allows the tree to turn the raw soil into sap, blossom, marble, fruit. And as long as that invisible internal system is happening, in due season it will continue to produce a harvest. Just like the goose and the golden egg. They try to cut the goose open and get all the gold out, and there's nothing in there but goose. And they come to an unfortunate understanding that it is the goose itself that is the source of wealth. They need to just be really, take good care of the goose. And so your mind, your intelligence, your receptivity to your own internal wisdom and guidance, and ultimately your consciousness itself, is the source of supply, which is the pure substance of all that appears in our material universe. So as long as you're connected to that and you're generating that, and in Awakened Wealth I talk about all the ways you can begin to generate that in your life, then it will produce a harvest after harvest after harvest of wealth. And it will look like dollar bills in one hand, or it will look like opportunity in another, or people helping you and giving to you in another, or a car or some other form of transportation. But it will keep producing fruit when you understand that. And you know that old saying, money is the root of all evil?
Well, that's not true.
The actual saying is the love of money is the root of all evil.
Hmm.
And what it's saying is the love of the symbol of wealth is the root of evil. Meaning, when we believe the symbol is the source, that's where all the problems start. If you believe a dollar bill is your source of wealth, or a client, or a job, or a boss, or a partner, now you start manipulating, cajoling, controlling, doing all kinds of crazy stuff to try to get what you think they have of yours, or to hold on to what you're afraid they might take. But when you realize none of that is your wealth, the wealth is in you, then you can take all the fruit, you can circulate it, you can do whatever you want, and you'll just be able to produce another harvest and another harvest. But when you think it's the symbols, all problems ensue from there.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Well, that's the deep meaning of that saying. And so that's why all the great spiritual teachers have been teaching, do not seek the things of the world, but seek first the kingdom of heaven or nirvana or the source or whatever name they gave it. Seek your connection to that, and then all of those things you've been seeking will be added unto you. They will be the added things. They will be the outer symbols or the outer fruits of a state of connected consciousness. But once you're connected to your source, which is in you, now the world can never take it away from you. You're free. And you can generate wealth in a downward economy. You can generate wealth in an upward economy. You can generate wealth whether you're boss, you're fired or hired, entrepreneurial or employee. You can generate wealth whether you're a housewife or a husband. It doesn't matter, because you recognize now that nobody and nothing outside of you is your source. All of that is at best your channel. But you and your heart, your soul, your consciousness, that is your source, and it's infinite and it's inexhaustible, and the world can't give it to you and the world can't take it away. And when you turn on that switch of that divine wealth machine within you, you become unstoppable.
Well, because you always know the right thing to do. Like you mentioned earlier in the show, all of the feelings that you get when you look at somebody, you have a sense, a gut sense, you know you're connected to somebody, you see an opportunity, but you have to be open enough to do that. And a lot of times, if you're living in the world where nothing works right, I can't believe I lost my job, you're sitting and wallowing, you can't be open to that. So the more you let all that go, and you really are opening your eyes to what's around you, because I do believe there's tons and tons and tons and tons of money out there. There's tons of everything that everybody wants. Like if I focus on having to get this particular person to do this particular thing, that's where I think we get into trouble. It's about more saying, you know what, I'd really like to have this happen in my life, and then just turn around and be open minded and conscious enough to just watch for it. I mean, because if your intuition's open and you're open, then it shows up. But sometimes it shows up weird. It can show up in ways that look strange. And that kind of brings me to something that I know people will understand, but I'd love for you to address it again. Why problems can be your best friend? Losing a job, you know, I just spoke to a group of people on happiness that just became unemployed, and how having these problems can turn into something very different than problems, as we talk about that. So talk about how the problems can really be gifts, if you will.
Absolutely. And I just want to say, you know, what I'm speaking about right now, I want you all to know this isn't theory. This isn't some trendy theoretical airy-fairy, new agey kind of thing. This is very, very hardcore, principle-based truths and teachings that I didn't make up. I formulated them into the Emergineering process and the Emergence or the Awakened Wealth. But it's truth principles, what are called the perennial truth teaching. And you can find them in the teachings of all the great masters. It's just they've gotten kind of covered up by dogma and doctrine and a lot of misunderstanding. But when you have a direct encounter with it and then practice it over and over and over again, which has happened now, the last group of people that went through the Awakened Wealth work, they made somewhere in the neighborhood of an extra $3 million as a result of practicing these principles. So it's, sold houses, bought houses, property, eliminated debt, all kinds of amazing things when they just started to come into alignment. And before we jump into the why problems are an answer, I want to just again hit this note that at the end of the day, all healing, all manifestation, all true progress is really about you, because it's already happening in truth, like that radio broadcast. It's ultimately all about you coming into greater alignment with the underlying principle that supports this. So, for example, you know, the law of buoyancy is always in operation and always was, you know, even before we had boats. But once we designed a structure that was in alignment with that principle of buoyancy, it adhered to the principle of buoyancy, it respected and was in alignment with it, suddenly our boat floated. When we designed a vehicle that was in alignment, in harmony, congruence, integrity with the principle of aerodynamics, that vehicle took flight. It wasn't like we added anything to life. We just designed a structure that was in integrity with a principle that was already there, but was invisible. And the same thing is true. When you design your life and your internal structures, mental, emotional, vibrational, physical, to become a ship, a vehicle that is now in integrity, in alignment with the principle of life, of abundance, of love, of wholeness, of oneness, then you're not adding anything to life or to you. You've just now come into alignment with an invisible principle that's always operating, and then your life bears witness to that. It manifests that. So during the time of Buddha, we could have had supercomputers and airplanes. All of those principles were happening, but it required somebody to discover them and then to teach or to learn how to come into alignment with them. So that's what we're talking about, and that's what all the great teachers were sharing. There are principles. There are principles. And when you bring your life into alignment with the principle, your life now starts to fly. It starts to float. It starts to bear witness to the potential of that principle. And so I just think it's really important. It's that simple, and it's also that difficult, because you know, there's trial and error. The Wright brothers crashed a lot of planes trying to figure out to get one how to fly. So there's trial and error, but if you understand you're working towards a principle, you know, Edison caught a principle of the electric light. It took him anywhere from 1,000 to 10,000, depending on the story, to figure out how to create something that was in integrity with that principle, but he knew the principle was there. So if you take nothing away from this, understand these are principles we're talking about. This isn't airy-fairy, wishful thinking, hopeful. You know, this is not New Age gobbledygook. This is principle. And when you design your life in integrity with the principles of life. In fact, look at the word evil. The word evil is just live backwards. And so what happens is when you live your life out of integrity with principle, your life starts to manifest what the world might call evil, error, lack, mistake, problems. When you live your life in integrity with the principle, all of that is erased, and your life starts to bear fruit that is very full of life and abundance and all that. So I just wanted to, you know, express that, and you have to be willing to be to create a way of life that is really committed to proving the principle in your life, because, you know, you might have to crash a few planes in your yard before you figure out how to make it fly, and that's how it goes for everyone. So let's talk about that, the problem.
And you know what, Derek, before we go, I do want to give people an opportunity. You know, you've been at this a very long time and very seasoned in it with all you've done. And I've studied a long time, but some of our listeners may not have, and maybe they're just going to listen through this. But if there are questions, I just want our listeners to know that they can call into the show at Happiness Hangout and talk to Derek Rydahl at 888-627-6008. And again, that's 888-627-6008. Okay, Derek, go ahead on about the problems.
Yeah, and if you hang on, we'll also give you guys some, I'm going to give you an opportunity to get some free trainings and all kinds of good stuff so I can support
Great.
You in absolutely doing the work. Not to mention, you can obviously pick up the book, Emergence, you know, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, whatever.
Yes.
So problems are a symbol, an emblem of a level, a vibrational level of consciousness. And what happens is as you are evolving, the evolutionary force of life is always happening. It's always seeking to unfold and progress to the next level and the next level and the next level. And when you desire something, when you pray, when you affirm, when you intend, even just when your back's against a wall and you cry out, I just need a better life, I just need to get through this or get over this, in all of those instances, you are activating your greater potential. You are activating that larger possibility. So by asking, by praying, affirming, intending, desiring, these are all activators. It's like an acorn looking out at a field of oak and maybe not even understanding why, but just yearning for a better life, a bigger life, right? Well, that activates the oak within that acorn. Now, the oak is trying to emerge through that acorn. If that acorn had self-consciousness, when it starts to emerge, it would feel pressure. Its shell would start to crack, which is its identity, and it would perceive something is going wrong. My whole life's falling apart. All the safety is falling apart. You know, and it might try to call in a shell repairman to fix its shell, and, you know, that's what we do as humans. But in fact, what's happening is a larger life is trying to break through. And so when we have problems and crises, this is an indication, and especially the chronic ones, that there's a larger life that has been activated and it's trying to emerge. But it's trying to emerge now through a shell of a former identity, of a previous self-concept, of a limited concept of how we should be in the world or what's possible, etc. So, for example, we pray to be more abundant. Or, for example, you know, we pray to be more patient. And we have this mistaken thought that, you know, life's just going to bop us on the head and we're going to be more patient. But, in fact, what more likely happens is suddenly we find ourselves in traffic more than ever. And now we're in rush hour traffic every day. It's like, oh my God, and it drives us crazy, and we're so angry, and we're less patient than ever, and we're like, oh my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And it feels like our prayer has not only not been answered, but it's been completely subverted. But in fact, that condition is arising for us to activate and integrate and ultimately own that muscle of patience, just like resistance training. And just like there are certain trees in the forest that need a forest fire, without the intensity of that heat, they wouldn't burn away the serotonin glue on the pine cones and release its progeny, and it wouldn't burn away all the old brush and create the space and the canopy. There's all kinds of wonderful things that a forest fire does when it happens naturally that is evolutionary. But if you are that tree and you don't know that, you know, and you have like a vision board, you might create vision boards where there are never fires in your forest. And you think that's a good thing, but if you manage to actually succeed at having a forest without fire, you will eventually, the forest will die. So our crises and our problems are creating a condition to pull the next stage of our potential out of us. There's some quality, some capacity, some skill, some strength that's trying to emerge. And the more we resist it, the more acute our problems and our crises will become. And that's also why in the Gospel of Thomas, it says, if you bring forth what is within you, what you bring forth will save you. If you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. Because that energy, once activated, will wreak havoc in your life until you allow it to become expressed and integrated. So that's the real meaning of our problems. It means you're on the cusp of a breakthrough, but you have to start asking some different questions and begin approaching your problems in a different way. And the first thing is you have to move from being merely a problem solver to being a vision holder. And what that means is, instead of asking, why me, why is this happening, or complaining about it, you need to begin to ask emergence questions like, what's the larger life that's trying to emerge by means of this? Or, who would I be if I got through this? What's the quality or the character? And then we start to activate and practice that now. Or, what quality would I have to develop more of to be totally okay, even if this condition never changed? And these kinds of questions now begin to stretch you outside of the paradigm of the problem and into the realm where the solution lives. And that's why Einstein said you cannot solve a problem at the level of thinking that created it. In fact, in truth, you can never solve a problem. Because again, a problem is an emblem of a vibrational level. And like ice always lives at 32 degrees, it's always going to be there at 32 degrees. You can't solve ice as long as you're living at the level of ice. If you're still at 32 degrees, you could pour hot water on ice all day long, but it's going to freeze back up. You're going to have more ice. So you have to rise to a higher temperature. You have to rise, and so the problem doesn't get solved. The problem dissolves as you evolve, and you evolve by raising your frequency, your vibration, and that happens by asking higher quality questions and keeping your attention on your bigger vision. I'll give one final analogy about this because I think people will really relate, and it's a fun analogy. Because we've really gotten mixed up with how to deal with problems. We think we deal with problems by focusing on the problem and trying to solve it, and that's, in fact, the very worst possible thing you can do. So another analogy is a race car driver, when they're learning to drive, they get taught how to pull out of a spin, which happens a lot. And so what they're taught is, you know, you get into a spin, and you're spinning out of control towards a wall. And everything in your body, all of your instincts, will make you want to look at the wall, because you're spinning towards it. And the belief is, if I just look at the wall, I can avoid hitting it. But in fact, if you look at the wall, what's going to happen?
You're going right at it.
You're going right into it. Why? Because the hands follow the eyes. And so you have to be trained to do what seems to be counterinstinctual, and you have to look away from the wall, look away from the problem, and look towards where you want to go. And it's so instinctual that a trainer will have to forcibly turn the driver's head. Like, they'll even know this, and sure enough, the car starts to spin, and the driver will look at the wall, and the trainer has to, like, forcibly shove their head back towards the road again. And everything in the person's body is still trying to look at the wall, you know, still trying to look at the wall. And eventually, you train yourself to look away from the problem and to look towards where you want to go. And then the hands follow the eyes, and it course corrects. But there's a very dangerous period in this, because even when you look away from the wall and you've course corrected, the car's got momentum, and so it's still sliding towards the wall. And in that gap, the mind kicks in and goes, it's not working, it's not working, and it looks back at the wall and then crash. And so the same thing we have to know, that even though everything in us now mentally, physically, first it wanted to look at the wall, now mentally and emotionally, it's afraid it's not working and it wants to look at the wall. We hold our gaze, and then eventually the wheels catch and the car pulls out of the spin. Now, a caveat to that is it guaranteed that if you look away from the wall, you're never going to hit it? No. You will hit it sometimes still. But if you look at the wall, you are guaranteed to hit it every time. So the only way to assure a greater increase of pulling out of that spin is you must look away from the problem. You must look towards the vision.
Well, and also then, your impact might not be as hard if you've done it the way you've explained. So maybe before that problem
exactly.
hit you so hard, and now maybe it's like, oh, and I find that a lot in my life. I'll have things that'll come up, and I'll just like tonight, I had a situation. I'm like, wait a minute, this is fine. You know, like it seemed before I would have just completely been, you know, pacing around and dealing with this issue. And then after I did for a while, I thought, wait a minute. No, it's okay. So the impact is lighter, and that's helpful too on some level.
Well, and also, even when you said, no, it's okay, this is fine, that is emotionally, mentally, and vibrationally looking away from the wall.
Mm.
And then you could further go, what's the opportunity here for me to learn? That's looking away from the wall. What's mm-hmm. the better possible vision for my life that could unfold as a result of this? Or what's the greater quality of my character that's trying to be strengthened? That's looking away from the wall. And then maybe you get inspired by an idea. You know what? I remember like one Tony Robbins once talking about this, where he got caught up in this lawsuit, and he was in this room, and he was in this lawsuit. He was probably going to end up having to pay, even though it wasn't even his fault, because he was part of a partnership. And instead of focusing and complaining like everybody else, he asked, what could I get out of this that could be really, really positive? And he got inspired from this conversation to go take a flight at the end of one of these long days, fly to New York and meet with a potential partner and have this incredible talk. And the flight there, he was thinking about the possibilities, had this great talk, and the flight back, ended up making a deal, came back to get back in the lawsuit the next day, but ended up making a deal that ultimately made him more money than he would have ever had to pay for this lawsuit. And because of where he was now emotionally and vibrationally, his impact in that lawsuit caused the lawsuit to not even happen, and so they ended up winning at the end of the day anyways. So
wow.
he put his attention on vision, on possibility, on opportunity, on learning, on lessons and blessings and expansion, and that problem bred opportunity. And it became a weight room that made him stronger. So you want to think of your problems, your crisis, like you've just been invited by your inner trainer to go on a nice workout routine and strengthen. You're lifting the barbell, and on each side of the barbell is whatever the name of your problem is, and it's making some part of you stronger. And if you want to really stretch this, if you're willing to do that in the context of having a bigger vision for your whole life, then all of these challenges are developing you and making you the strong instrument and leader capable of ultimately fulfilling that greater vision. And without these challenges and opportunities, you may not develop the muscles and the ability to really thrive. It's like the chicken and the egg. You know, there's a point where the chicken outgrows its eggshell, and it's cramped, it's in pain, it's out of food, and it stinks because it's full of its own pollutants. So it's full of pollution, it's hungry, and it's in pain. And if it could have a self-consciousness and complain about, why did its parents do this to it? You know, why is God doing this to it? Why me? Why is this happening? Or if some farmer was to take pity on the chicken and open up the egg and free it, the chicken would die. But instead, the instincts of the chicken is not to focus on what's not working, but to look for, where is the good still? Where's the good in the situation? Let me look for every last little bit of nourishment. And so it starts to peck. And it pecks for the nourishment. It doesn't peck because it's angry. It doesn't peck because it's complaining. It's pecking and looking for nourishment. So it focuses on the good. As a result of that, it starts to strengthen its neck, its its wing muscles, its lungs, and it cracks open the shell. And now once it's freed into this larger environment, it is now strong and capable of thriving. So the same mechanism is in us if we know how to embrace our problems in the understanding that all of life is conspiring for our evolution, for our freedom, for our greater fulfillment, and now we have to start acting like it.
Well, Derek, if you can believe this or not, we're down to our last minute, and I want to make sure I tell folks where to get your information. You know, if you really want to get into this and understand the details of this and how to apply it, Derek's book is Get Emergence, 7 Steps for Radical Life Change. It's on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And Derek, you're also offering a free Law of Emergence audio e-course to your audience. And everyone can find that at www.emergencetraining.com. That's Emergence, E-M-E-R-G-E-N-C-E, emergencetraining.com. And in this 7-part high-impact content training course, you can discover the true nature of your consciousness and how to access its full power to transform anything in your life. You'll learn how to activate the law of emergence principle and actualize more potential than you ever thought possible so that you can take your life to the next level. So make sure you also check out Derek Riedel at derekriedel.com, and it's DerekRiedel.com. You can hear his podcast and see his other great information. And Derek, we really thank you for the free e-course, and I'll also be promoting that out on social media for you as well.
I think you said the book is Get Emergence. The book is actually Emergence, but if they get the book at Amazon or Barnes & Noble, they can go to the website getemergencebook.com. And if they click on that and go get the book and then leave their information, I'm going to give them another, I think it's like $1,700 in free trainings and gifts and stuff.
Oh, my gosh, that's amazing. So make sure you go to DerekRiedel.com. Well, Derek, thank you so much for being with us. Very interesting information and just kind of the overview and start of things. And I really encourage people to get the book and really get into this because it can really change your life. I know it's changed mine. Well, thank you, Derek, so much for being on the Happiness Hangout, and I look forward to sending out the podcast for those who missed the live show, and look forward to people being able to get to your information. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's really been my pleasure, and everyone, stay inspired. I look forward to connecting with you again.
Thank you so much. Have a great night. Bye-bye, everyone. Want to find a space to participate in reading, activities, interactive blog, and much more? Check out www.happinesshangout.net. Looking for a speaker or workshop around the area of happiness? We customize presentations to fit your needs. Just click on the My Services tab at the website. You can also support the site by shopping at Amazon or one of our other affiliates. Just go to www.happinesshangout.net. And click on the shopping link or go to my page here at BBS Radio.